in your hands, so when they get things fixed and repaired, you can say, hey, look, this is what I had. You have it. I want it back. Is your personal data safe? Family records, addresses, phone numbers? Well, squeeze on over to freedomslips.com. Yes, that's www.freedomslips.com. Click the banner on the homepage for the EMP proof bullet drive to get the full scoop of everything that we offer. So, folks, keep your data safe for your peace of mind. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you got it.
Red, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It just was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne, and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit partdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
What happens when a man goes through his own portal?
Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
Up the airy mountain, down the rushing glen, we dare not go a-hunting for fear of little men. You see, nobody ever goes in. Nobody ever comes out.
You're all a bunch of slaves! How long do you think it's gonna last? How long are you gonna let them push you around? I tell you this, I'm gonna get my kicks before the whole shithouse goes up in flames.
Welcome to Altair 4, gentlemen.
Law, put fire hands!
Welcome to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. It's Monday evening, Eastern Time, 8 p.m. that is, and it is time for the Fenton Perspective with Florian Fenton.
Welcome
Welcome, everyone, to the Fenton Perspective here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I'm your host, Lorian Fenton, and boy, what a wild few days I've had, or week. It's been really, really crazy. I just saw something pop up on the screen. I wasn't looking at it. I hope it wasn't for me. I guess it wasn't. Okay, good job there. I'm trying to figure out how to get my guest on today, but that'll all happen. But let me tell you guys what happened. Last Friday or it was a week ago Tuesday, I went up to Colfax and Reno to be with my uncle, my cousins on my, it's a long story, but they're distant cousins. You know, second removed or something like that, because this uncle married into our family. So all of his relatives are like my second or third cousins or something like that. Anyhow, I went up there to hang out with my cousin and my uncle, and it was his 90th birthday. And he watches Ancient Aliens all day long. He watches Unidentified. He's 90 years old. And all he does is, when he sees me, is, oh, my God, you're here. And I'm like, you know, his favorite niece out of all of his nieces, because you want to know why, folks? Because I know George Norrie. I can't believe it. He listens to Art Bell, George Norrie, all these years. I mean, every night. And so I got up to the party and I thought, you know what? George is so sweet. Maybe he'll give a shout out to my uncle. So I texted Tommy, and sure enough, we're all listening. It's, you know, it's 10 o'clock. Everybody's tired. Everybody wants to go home. And I had my uncle say I had George Norrie say my uncle's name, and it was his birthday, and it was the first thing on the show, very first thing he said on the show that Wednesday night, June 12th, my uncle's 90th birthday, and my uncle has not stopped smiling since. I mean, it's just great. I mean, of all the things I've ever done, maybe this whole 10-year saga has been just to get George Norrie to say my uncle happy birthday, 90th birthday to George Haralampus live on Coast to Coast. Maybe that was all it was for. I don't know. But I felt so good that day. It was like, God, I've done something positive in this whole field. It was just crazy. I was like so happy. I was like a kid at Christmas. So, you know, I mean, some days in this whole field, I actually get excited and I'm happy. And then that's what I'm going to talk to you guys about at the top of the show today. And then when I got home, I saw a bunch of people on Friday. I got home Saturday night late. I woke up Sunday, and I swear to God, I looked like Alvin and the Chipmunks from the TV and cartoons. My right cheek was huge. It was giant size, and it hurt like hell. So I got another abscess, and it was very, very bad. And I put off all day dealing with it. I thought, oh, I'll put heat on it, I'll put whatever on it, and no, it didn't work. So I ended up in the ER late Sunday, I mean, like 2 o'clock in the morning, and they had to do like minor, like, you know, cheek surgery, and they went in there and did all that, drained it. Oh, it was ugly. God, you guys, oh, just ugly stuff. I'm telling you, I never want to go through that again. And then they put me on these horrible antibiotics. Excuse me, I usually don't cough. I usually hit the button ahead of time, but I couldn't reach it right now. So really ugly antibiotics, and I'm still suffering from them, but I've got it a little better under control, and who knows what might happen. So anyhow, they're just ugly antibiotics. I don't know. I hardly take antibiotics, but man, I'm telling you, 10 days of misery. It's just like you want to be sick all day long. Do you guys know what Emetrol is? I hope you do. It saved my life again. It's Emetrol. It's for children for nausea, and it works great on adults too. Just thought you guys might want to know that. And I don't buy the cheapy one, you know, the CVS brand or the Walgreens brand or whatever. I buy the original Emetrol, even though it doesn't have ionic water in it anymore like it used to back in the old days. It still works pretty good, and it really settles your stomach if you're sick. nauseated. So I hope you guys remember that. E-M-E-T-R-O-L, Emmetrol. It's in all pharmacies. It works wonders. So just so you know, I keep it around as a hangover cure, even though I don't drink. But back in the day when I did have a few here and there, that was my main go-to. And then I down an Emmetrol, take an Advil, then I go back to bed for an hour, then I get up and drink a Dr. Pepper. And that seemed to cure just about anything that was out there. So anyhow, back to what happened. So I couldn't make it to the show Monday. I was so sick. I just was not. I couldn't do it, but I slept until 7:30, 7:45, and then I made that final call, and I did make it to my show on the other network at 8, but man, it was an ugly, ugly day last Monday. So that's what happened. Now, back to why I brought all this up. It's because, you know, that one little gesture of goodness in the community was really wonderful, and I'm so happy about it for my uncle getting a shout out from George Norrie. But you guys, this is the most, I get on here and everybody goes, oh, you're so depressing and you're so this and you're so that. But I'm telling you guys the truth. This is a cutthroat business, ufology, and now that it's becoming more mainstream, it's gotten even more so. I used to think that when disclosure happened, that everything would be just hunky-dory and we'd all be like singing kumbaya, you know? I really did. I guess I'm stupid and naive. I am. But beyond that, I'm like, okay, so what's the deal here? I'm still trying to figure it all out. I'm still trying to figure out how this can even be happening. That, you know, people like, you know, God, Giorgio Tsoukalos. I mean, I'm not going to say horrible things about the people on Ancient Aliens and all that, but that was a huge eye-opener for me, is that AlienCon has become, it was last week, this last weekend, as you guys all know, that AlienCon and Contact in the Desert and events like that are becoming how people are finding out about UFOs and aliens and Unidentified, the new TV show from To the Stars Academy. I'm just, you know, I just don't know anymore. I'm kind of over it all, to be honest with you. But okay. My guest is texting me, so I'm going to have to figure out how to get her on the show. Apparently her computer's not working, and I'm going to have to, okay, let me just tell her this, and then I'll get back to what I was talking about in a few minutes. Let me send her that. Okay, so, you know, I'm very naive about this whole thing, and I didn't realize that this was an industry, and I finally got it this week. I'm going, this is an industry. It's just like any other industry. You know, people got to make their money. They got to do this, and they got to do that. So I decided that the theme for my next conference, which will be coming up in February of 2020 in the Bay Area, my next UFO conference will be this, simply this. It's going to be, disclosure has happened, where are the contactees? It's going to be that simple, because it's like, I look around and I go, okay, so we've got all these military people involved. We've got all these, you know, eyewitnesses. Now they're trying to tell us just of this week that the Tic Tacs are probably man-made. And I'm like, okay, so where did that come from? And if it's true, how come all the people at Bigelow and everywhere else in Skunk Works, it's not there anymore, but, you know, JPL, I don't know who's making them anymore, Area 51 guys, I don't know. How come no one's leaked that information yet? I mean, yes, I get it. They'll shoot you if you talk, but this is important. This is one of those things that a whistleblower's got to come forward. Every once in a while, back in the day, we used to have a whistleblower come forward and give us information on the down low. I mean, somebody would find out the truth. And, you know, we're just at a point where now they're trying to say these could be ours. I'm like, what the hell is going on around here? This is really crazy. I, you know, a month ago, they were U apps, and now they're our apps. And I'm like, what the heck? So I want you guys to know something. I'm laying in bed, not feeling good this week, and I finally realized this is all about, because the whole thing, from top to bottom, every organization, to the Stars Academy, the military, Bigelow's gang, everything is about taking the focus off of the contactee, completely taking it off of them. There's nobody out there on any of those shows talking about their contact experiences, about the consciousness. And I realized also that people like Ray Hernandez and the group Free, and even Greer's CE5 group, and even Costa's contact group, and all these people are being ignored to the point of crickets of silence. It's just insane how they're being ignored. I mean, Free did the most amazing research for their book, and they've got Dr. Joseph Birx working with them. They've got Ray Hernandez. They had Edgar Mitchell. I mean, these people are really on the cutting edge of what's really going on with the other dimensional beings, which is exactly what they've come to the conclusion of. I mean, pretty much so. Scientifically, we can't prove it, but everybody knows consciousness and dimension and time travel and time are the key here, the absolute key. So why is this not ever being talked about? And it goes back to what I figured out when this all first started is very simply this. It's going to be a 5-year rollout of their reel, and then it'll be a debate for about 5 years about if their hours are theirs, and we're going to go back and forth for about 5 years, and then another 5 years or two or three, depending on how fast the population actually, you know, drinks the Kool-Aid, how quickly they drink the Kool-Aid. It could be a year. It could be up to 5 years. It's just it's a long game for these guys. It's a huge long game. So we've got 1 to 5 years for the, oh, it could be ours. We had exactly a year and a half of where are they from? Now we're into just the beginnings of, oh, they could be ours. So that'll probably take another year to roll out. And then we got another year or two of, well, if they're ours, who's doing it? And that's another year. I mean, these guys don't do any step without maybe it taking at least 6 months to roll out and then another year to analyze. So let's look at 18 months of 6 bullet points. God, how many is that? So that's about, 5 years, 5 or 6 years. So there you go. That's the first 5 or 6 years. And then who knows what they're going to do in the second 5 to 10 year rollout. And then the next 5 to 10 year rollout. These guys have it planned for 20 years out. I know this on good authority, guys. I know this on good authority. And I'm telling you, it'll be 20 years before they start talking. Well, maybe it won't be. Maybe it'll be 10. Maybe it'll be 5. Maybe in 5 or 10 years, they'll start talking about the consciousness aspect, the aliens themselves, how they communicate with us, how this is all possible, how it could be going on, and the fact that there's many different types, there's many different ways of contact, and it's very complex. It's not a simple solution, and that we've been having contact for a very long time. On many levels. So when's that all going to roll out? My guess is 20 years. 20 years we'll get to start hearing about the aliens. And they want to make sure that the kids that are born now are in their 20s and they know that those UAPs are real. They know that we've been able to back engineer them from spacecraft. They're going to know all this in 20 years. Then they'll start talking about how we're in contact with the aliens, because then nobody will care. I mean, seriously, I don't think anybody will care. We'll become a Star Trek society in 40 years if they roll this out correctly. There'll be a new generation of kids out there. And their kids will like, oh, yeah, the aliens are down the street. Can I go play with them? It won't be like District 9, I hope. God forbid. I don't want that happening. Okay, I'm going to try to get my guest on. Like I said, there's been a ton of stuff happening in the UFO world this week. And Melinda Leslie was on last week, and we had such a horrible connection that I said, you've got to be back on this week. And so much has happened since she was on last week anyhow. So it's going to be a very great show for you guys. Let me figure out how I may have to hang up on everybody and then have Hawk reconnect us. I'm going to take a minute to hang up and connect with Melinda. And then I'll be back with you guys in just a few minutes. So hang in there. It's going to be a great show today. I really want you to hang in there. Okay, I'll be right back, everybody.
I'm for 15 minutes, 20 minutes. I've been trying for 20 minutes to get my computer to work.
Hey, everyone, I think we're back. Let me figure out what's going on here. I think Nighthawk will let me know. There we are. Yay. Thank you, Nighthawk. Okay, so we're back, and I've got Melinda Leslie with me here, and we're going to be talking everything about what I just talked to you guys about. And let's see. Let me figure out where I want to begin with this. Melinda, I was just telling everybody that it's very interesting how these guys are rolling out this new concept of those could be our Tic Tacs. You've been following this, right?
I've been following everything, yes.
Yeah, it's crazy. So last week we were having a lot of trouble getting you on the show, and right now we've got you on and everything's going great. So why don't we start with the Wilson documents from last week and go forth that everything has happened this week. How does that sound?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, great. So tell us, you know, your take on the whole Wilson documents, and now people are starting to say that they're real, and then there's people that are saying they're not real. So we'll get there. So go ahead and tell people about the Wilson documents and what's going on with that.
Okay, well, the Wilson documents, I think, is an incorrect title, because I think to call it the Eric Mitchell documents is probably not
accurate.
Although that's controversial for a number of reasons right now. But there are three documents that have come out. Two released from unknown sources. There's a little bit of a trail, but that trail goes back to one individual who says he is not the primary source. And so, and then there are... So we don't know who the primary source of these is. The third document was one in when, let me go back a bit, minute. A series of documents was provided to Grant Cameron, a bunch of them all at once at a conference, which was Paula Harris's Star Wars conference a year and a half ago. So a year and a half ago, a gentleman who was there, a researcher in the field by the name of James Rigney, who a lot of us are friends with and know, gave a set just before Grant was leaving, said, I have something for you, and gave him a set of documents right before Grant was supposed to get on a shuttle to go to the airport. Grant, upon looking at them, realized, and when I say Grant, I mean Grant Cameron, and he looked at them and realized exactly what he had or the nature of them, even just right. Reading the first page. Okay. That gentleman also eventually sent Grant at a separate time, mailed him some additional documents, okay, at a separate time.
Okay.
Grant
Melinda,
has all of these. Yes.
Yeah. Did James say it was okay to say his name? Because I thought a week ago we
yes.
weren't allowed to talk about
no,
it.
No. We can talk about him. No problem.
Okay.
No
all
problem.
Right.
He's come forward. No, he's come forward and been interviewed by many people now. It's not a mystery.
Okay,
he does
great.
Want to kind of lay low because he says, I am not the primary leak. I got them from somebody who he met at a conference having to do with space, not a UFO conference, but another
right.
event.
Right.
And this person, I believe, is the one who gave these to him. I have theories as to who that is, that I have spoken to some of the key researchers. Just so everybody knows, I should explain real quick my involvement. This
yes.
was not something I looked to get involved with. I've been really busy with work, doing my UFO sign tours every night, clients every day. I was planning at one time three separate back-to-back trips. One of those we ended up not doing, so it's it became two separate back-to-back trips. And I had just come from being out of town for 5 days where I was a speaker at an event, not Contact in the Desert. It was happening that same weekend, but a different event that I was involved in doing some lectures and classes at. I came back. I was super busy. I got slammed with work. Thank God we've had good weather here, but it's made me have tours every single night. In fact, I have one tonight. And so this was really bad timing for me. I did not wish to necessarily get involved. And I hesitated at first because what had happened is, I think it was a week ago last Friday. What had happened is a series of documents. First one came out prior to that I was unaware of. And the first document to get released came out, I believe, on Imgur, and then on Imgur, at least initially, and it was a memo that is talking about a group of emails that are people associated with NIDS, National Institute of Discovery Science, discussing the Santilli alien autopsy film and whether it's real or not. Now, everyone's going to put this in the context that this was back at the date, and I don't have it right in front of me to see the date of that document, but it was back in the 2000s when everyone was considering the possibility, late 90s, early 2000s, about the legitimacy of that. And so these gentlemen involved in NIDS at the time, National Institute of Discovery Science, were discussing that at the time. Now, just because they were saying it was real at the time does not mean that these folks would feel that way necessarily now. So everyone shouldn't say, oh, well, this means they think it's real. No, maybe at the time, back then they did. You got to remember, most of ufology thought that the Santilli autopsy film was legitimate back then.
Well, since then, you know what, Melinda? I just want to say something really quick about that. A lot of people thought it was a real recreation of what the guy saw. I mean, at least in the community I was hanging out with at the time, that's what their theory was, well, is that he recreated it as what it kind of looked like, what they were actually doing from a film that he actually saw. That's what I heard back in the day. Okay.
Well, just to this throw day, that out there. Okay, to this day, apparently Santilli has been contacted just in the last couple of days. And one researcher in the field, James Ilandoli, I believe, got a email from Santilli backing up a conversation they had on the phone. James contacted him, found him through some different sources. Actually, I take that back. It might have not been James. In fact, I don't think it was. I think it was this guy who's a Hollywood rep for a few people in ufology. I think that's who it was. So I dial that back. But anyways, whoever the gentleman was, and Grant knows more about this. I admit it's a little part of the story I'm not following as closely. But this gentleman, again, going back to who that may have been, I'm forgetting his name right now. But that gentleman, through Hollywood sources, got a current phone number for Ray Santilli and called him and also apparently emailed him. Their discussions led to Ray Santilli saying he always believed that what he had was legitimate. Only a few scenes were recreated because their quality was poor. And so a few scenes were recreated. A few others in the original film was touched up, but they used some of the original film in the original, you know, movie/documentary. So that is my understanding, and Ray still stands by this. Now, again, I do not know if it's real or not, and I do not know if the people discussing this in emails back years ago, as stated in this first document, if they would believe that now. Okay, I don't, again, I'm not following that aspect of the story as closely. Do I need to get up to speed on it? Yes. Do I need to read the emails more closely? Yes. I have not done that. I have not had the time.
Well, I'm just...
Again, I'm going to emphasize, I haven't had the time to do all this, and it is taking day and night. I'm forfeiting eating and sleeping.
Yeah, I know. This is an ongoing story.
And yeah. it's just crazy for me right now. And it's like a huge whirlwind of a black vortex that sucked me into it, because I dared to come forward with one tiny little piece of evidence, actually two significant pieces of evidence in support of the second document. Now, Grant has released the third document.
Melinda, hold on, because now I'm sure the audience is totally confused that we went to the alien autopsy video first. And that's actually the first document. No, that's actually the third document.
That is the first document released.
Okay.
Which came out about a week before the Wilson document.
Oh, okay. Well, how come no one paid any attention to it until after the Wilson documents? That's weird.
I think because it came up where not many people saw it. When they did, a lot of people were instantly turned off because they see alien autopsy and they go, It didn't come to the awareness of researchers who would know the significance of the group of names on it. So I think it languished a little bit on the internet. Even I saw one little posting about it. I saw alien autopsy, new evidence, blah. You know, I'm not paying attention. Me and everybody else. Okay?
I saw that too, and I paid absolutely no attention.
Okay,
so.
That's what happened, and that was about a week before.
Wasn't that Colin's post first that we saw it on? Because whenever I see Colin's post, I kind of go, oh, okay, Colin, and I go on.
Yeah. Yeah, and it may have been that he got word of it because he's always been a supporter of it and its reality. And so he could have seen it and it, you know, meant something to him when the rest of us went, okay. I admit, so it flew under my radar. Did I see something on the internet, on Facebook? Yeah, I just, you know, I can't look at everything. I see 1,000 things a day, or at least a couple hundred on Facebook. I can't pay attention. I don't have the time. Lorianne, you know. You're not even on Facebook as much as I am. You know, you're not seeing it, you know.
And so that's what's happening. And just to make sure I'm not missing anything. And if I see anything exciting, I read about it. So that's me.
Yeah. So this flew under the radar. Then what happened, and my understanding is a week later, is my understanding, I could be wrong, but my understanding at this point is a week later, suddenly this other document comes out. My understanding is it did come out on Imgur, but it when people really noticed it was someone had posted it on Reddit in a discussion group it's called the Young Guns group. Okay. It's just a group of individuals in ufology. Don't get anyone worked up about it, but you know, they were having a discussion and somebody posted. They realized that the person who posted the source, which is a code name and a number, you know, whatever, is the same person that had posted the other one. So a few people noticed, okay, this is from the same post. And so it shows up. And that's when it gets discussed. My understanding, that was late on a Thursday night, and my even clearer understanding is that it was likely very early Friday morning. Friday, maybe there's a mention on the internet. Again, I didn't quite notice it. It was Saturday that I noticed it. Now, why this becomes significant to me is when I noticed it, there was a paragraph. So when I say it, I'm talking about the Wilson document. So everyone realized there's the email memo document about the autopsy film. Okay. And it goes back and forth on that. And that was the first thing released. The second thing released is the Wilson document. Now, Grant says these are all part of the documents that he had received. The majority of them at once and a few of them later, but from the same source, which was James Rigney. Okay?
Got it.
So James Rigney says he got these from one source. He doesn't want to disclose that source, understandably, because there would be a reason to protect that person. because they also feel that maybe this person is going to release some more. So nobody wants to expose them because we don't want to stop them from releasing more documents. I agree with that. I also agree the need to protect them given the nature of these documents. If a source leaked these, that person needs to be protected. So, you know, because there would be possibly legal and security ramifications given the classified nature of what's discussed, combined with possibly, you know, threats and warnings to his health and or, you know, well-being and life. So for those reasons, you know, obviously there'd be a reason to protect the individual. I don't have any problem with anyone holding back. And I have a theory as to who one of the primary sources might be, either the primary source or someone working with some other individuals. But it's a pretty good theory, and I'll explain a little bit more about that later. Because let's go back to the Wilson document. The Wilson document is very, very important, I believe, for a number of reasons. Now, it could be ufology's just going to go, meh, you know, meh, and move on. But I don't think we should. I think it's extremely significant. And I'm amongst a series of researchers, including James Rigney, given the source he says he got them from and the backstory, Grant Cameron, Richard Dolan, Linda Moulton Howe, myself, you know, as well as a few others, you know, but those are the key ones, who believe that this is legitimate and worthy of attention. I agree with those individuals. Part of why I agree, and Lorianne knows this well, is I have a research partner, Randy Kopeng. We have been researching for 28 years. I recently looked it up to be, in all fairness, 25 years. 25 years of research. I've been in ufology for 30 years. 25 of those 30 years have been spent in great part not only doing my MILAB research, which is continues to this moment, and that actually started a few years earlier. So let's say I've been in ufology for 30 years, I've been doing MILAB research for 28 years, but for 25 years, Randy Kopeng and I have been researching something called the working group, or the originally called the Advanced Physics Working Group, or the Theoretical Physics Advanced Working Group. So, but called the Advanced Physics Group for short. We have been researching that intensely, and over a 25-year period have developed an extensive timeline of this group of individuals and their involvement in ufology. Going back to the Wilson document, as it's called, is an interview that Dr. Eric Davis, of fame for being involved in NIDS and working with Hal Putoff in the at his primary business in Austin, Texas. And so he's a scientist that works and runs a business along with Hal Putoff, and that they're also known for the ATOM project, which is the metamaterials research and the possibility of having received crash retrieval pieces through their conjunction with To the Stars Academy and the ATIP program, and that pieces are being worked on and investigated as part of the ATOM project. So that history is current and well known amongst anyone following the To the Stars Academy ATIP story. But going back to this document, upon my seeing it on the Saturday after it's released, late Saturday night, my jaw hits the ground, because in there, stated within it, are a couple of paragraphs mentioning the reason for the meeting, and it gets into Dr. Eric Davis, as I started to say, is interviewing a gentleman who ends up being, I should have my note in front of me, but of course, in my rush to get in here, I threw them in my binder and they got rearranged. So I'm grabbing it really quick. because I want to state his title properly. But it is Rear Admiral, or actually Vice Admiral, Vice Admiral Thomas Wilson, who was at the time of the original interview, deputy, or actually he may have been retired. In fact, he was retired then. But prior to that, in the mid and late 90s, he was deputy director of the DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, Joint Chiefs of Staff. He held the position of J2. Well, you guys, deputy director of DIA is like saying assistant director of the CIA or assistant director of the NSA. You know, that's basically what it means. He's the assistant director of the Defense Intelligence Agency. And this is the guy that Dr. Eric Davis is meeting with. And now, right away, Thomas Wilson, Admiral Thomas Wilson, is saying to Eric, I know why you're here. There's a couple of paragraphs where he's talking about this. And he says, Now, when I say paragraphs, these are notes from an interview. After rereading it many times, it's clear, and other people in ufology were pointing this out early on, it is not a transcript. It is Eric Davis's notes of the interview. So it's not a word-for-word transcript. Parts of it may be word-for-word because he is quoting the gentleman, and other parts he's paraphrasing him and adding in additional notes, probably as he looked up names and organizations or whatever and realized, you know, so it's like a clarification, and it is absolutely notes from the interview, if in fact the whole thing is legitimate, which again, you know, that remains in question, but we believe given its nature and its tone that it is. There would be really no way without Eric or the Admiral, who's now again retired, but Eric or Thomas Wilson stating that, you know, it's accurate. And of course, these people have been contacted. Multiple researchers have attempted to get a hold of many of the names involved, with the exception really of one of those, as far as the Wilson document, with the exception of one of those. Everyone else who has been contacted is saying no comment. Okay, so they're not commenting on it in a very official way. So, and many of the researchers in the UFO field who are looking into this, like myself, are kind of in agreement that we think it's a no comment to the point of avoidance, and I'll get more into that in a minute too. So, going back to that paragraph jumped out because it talked about a meeting that happened at amongst an earlier precursor of what we know as NIDS, National Institute of Discovery Science, a precursor of that going back many years, which again points to the working group. Randy and I have known for quite a long time, even prior to public information being known about this in late 90s, early 2000s. But prior to that, going back to 94, before any public awareness, it's a long story why, it's a very detailed story, but one of the members of the group, who I believe may have been upset at the other members, used me by telling me about the existence of the group. So that goes back to how I knew about it. I ended up confronting various members over the years, and because I knew a lot of details, as I expressed those details in one-on-one conversations with me, they confirmed its existence. And then eventually, not shortly thereafter, Howard Bloom writes his book talking about it, and now eventually in recent years, Colonel John Alexander talks about it in two books, saying, yes, it was my group, this is why we formed. Just so everyone knows, if they go, well, that's no big deal, it's been out there. Well, I think Howard Bloom came across it through multiple sources. I believe originally he even states that it was through one of the individuals involved. It could be someone involved was letting out some information about it. That's what happened to me. But in my case, I believe I was told some real specifics so that I would relay it to the other members because somebody was trying to piss them off. And it's, that's the only thing that makes sense, but it's, it makes perfect logic sense. But I did immediately approach back in 94, one of the key individuals. And long story short, because a very long conversation, he ended up confirming his involvement. So over the years, in fact, recent years, that gentleman passed away. I had remained very good friends with him. I don't mind saying this because this information is now out there in a variety of forms and other interviews that I've done. And his name is Jack Houck. He was one of the original meeting attendees at the meeting at BDM Corporation in Virginia in 1985 when this group formally met, possibly for the first time, or it may have pre-existed, but for whatever reason, they were having a formal meeting stating their goals and plans moving forward. That is referenced in the Wilson document. Wilson is telling Dr. Eric Davis, hey, I know why you're here. Oak Shannon, who was another gentleman involved in that group, said, I can trust you. You're okay. I can talk to you. Oak told me all about the working group. He told me all about its history. He told me all about meeting at BDM Corp. So he goes on and on about that. While I'm reading that, my jaw hits the floor because my contact upon his passing, we knew about this, but upon his passing, another friend and researcher friend of mine who is in close communication with his family, is told, hey, he's got some file boxes at his house. Would you guys like to go through them? This friend of mine goes after this gentleman passes, which all happened while I'm living here in Sedona, and this was in Southern California. So it was at a bad timing for me where I wasn't able to go back, but this other friend of mine knew what to look for when given these files. They were personal files of Jack Houck in his possession. And so my friend goes through them. We're mostly interested in because my friend and I were very involved with Jack Houck in his teaching psychokinesis courses, psychokinesis spoon bending, you know, and doing what he called PK parties. We were looking for his information and his records of that and his scientific papers on it. We thought that would be very important to have and to pass on and possibly put on the internet, et cetera. So that was our main interest. My friend did find documents relating to that, but then he saw these other things that stuck out because he was familiar with Randy Kopangs and my research. And he called us up and said, hey, I think I came across something. And what they were was the agenda from that meeting in 1985, some handwritten notes by Jack, some handouts from that meeting. And back then, there was no such thing as PowerPoint. And so there were these overhead projector transparencies. And that there was a copy set of the transparencies. And so there was those documents, the copies of the transparencies, again, notes, handwritten notes during the meeting by Jack, and the agenda for the meeting, et cetera. So when this got mentioned in the Wilson letter, I'm like, well, I've got a piece of evidence backing up at least those paragraphs and Oak Shannon's involvement. You know, I've got information and some documents to back up that at least that part is correct. I can't speak for the rest of everything in the Wilson document, but I can speak to that part, the references to that meeting. And I uniquely know, or Randy and I, and Grant, because Grant on his own through another source, was given some documents from that meeting many years ago. I realized while following Grant's research and reading on his website that he had some of it and I had other parts. So I spoke with my research partner, Randy, and we agreed. And at the same conference where James Rigney gave the infamous set of documents to Grant, at that same conference, gave a set of my documents to Grant. And one of them was Randy's and I complete timeline over the history, because Grant had a lot of it and we just had some more. So we were here to say, hey, Grant, you're onto it. We've come across it too. You're right on in what you found, but here's more. Here's missing dates and stuff in between and meetings in between and, you know, more that you didn't know about. And Grant then, since then, has given Randy and myself credit for the additional work that he has. And we've shared, you know, research on and off in the year and a half since, you know, that conference. And so again, Grant, upon reading these documents at the end of the conference, after he had just seen at the same conference, the documents for me and the ones he previously had, it hit him like a ton of bricks. He's like, oh my God, this is like documentation backing up all these various components. And he instantly realized its significance. And then he admittedly sat on them since then till now for a number of reasons. One is he knew their explosive nature and he wanted to be certain he was handling them correctly. He wanted to do more research on them. And then he was thinking of putting some of them in a book that he was writing. And he spoke to lawyer Michael Hall in ufology and said, Michael, what should I do? Michael said, well, if you publish any of this, you have to redact it. You have to remove the names and maybe anything regarding classified codes or something, you know, that could come back to haunt you. And so that was his suggestion. And he and Michael Hall set up apparently a trust for these documents and a safe protection. I think they've gone to multiple sources for protection, whatever. Okay. And so he was following Michael Hall's direction about the need to remain cautious. And Grant thought, well, if they come out there, I'll put them forth. So he started to talk about the fact that he had these, but had not come out with them. Again, understandably, he wanted to put them in a book and also proceed with them with caution. So all of a sudden, when everything comes out totally separate from Grant, whoever put these out and gave them to James Rigney, and apparently at the time they were given to James Rigney, it turns out they may have been given to other individuals as well. But again, everybody's sitting on them. James gives them to Grant. Grant's going to, you know, include them in a book or do something. He's mulling over them. And then all of a sudden, independent of all these individuals, maybe someone got impatient with the fact that there was no action. And probably a great deal because of the timing of what is going on with the disclosure subject right now, that the person had motivation for why they would want them out now. And being that the researchers who had been given pieces, including, you know, Richard Dolan had been given apparently 2 pages of it early on, I want to say a year ago, probably at about the same time Grant was, or shortly after, maybe many months later, but, you know, not that long after or within the last year that he was given 2 pages of it. So, but he thought, well, there's more. I want to see if more comes out. I shouldn't be talking about this till I know more. You know, everyone was kind of trying to be cautious and do a little research, do their due diligence, you know. And I think what happened, I don't know, I'm just speculating, that somebody became impatient and put these out there ahead of all these people. But now that they're out there, everyone is talking about it. Those key researchers are coming forward to saying, okay, this is what I've had. And now that it's out there, I'm free to talk about it because whatever, it's out there. I can see it. So now they're addressing it. And then again, though, those couple of paragraphs referring to the original meeting at BDM, the fact that it mentioned Oak Shannon, that Oak Shannon said, hey, you can trust this guy, you know, spoke to how this happened, that Eric was
Melinda, we're hitting our one and only break of the hour, so hang in there. We'll be right back. Mute if you can, okay?
Reality Extraction. On Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion. You can find me on Studio B every Thursday at 1700 hours Pacific Time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern. No topic taboo, no subject too strange. I strive to take a neutral standpoint during the dissection of the topic at hand. That's Reality Extraction with Mr. Rowe on Revolution Radio.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of
more... Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that. What? Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It just was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne, and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit partdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Fenton Perspective here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I am hoping that everything's okay at the studio. It looks like it. All right, we're good. I'm just hearing a whishing sound like we're in the wind, but sometimes that happens when the mic's left open at the studio. So we'll see what happens here in the next few minutes. I hope you guys can't hear it. I can, but who knows? So we've got Melinda Leslie as my guest today, and she's explaining all the documents that came across the way. And I'm not going to say anything until she kind of wraps it up near the end of the show. And I'm going to ask her a couple pertinent questions. But this is really a history lesson for you guys. And that's why I've had her back, because last week we tried to connect with her and we just had horrible problems. And this week she's clarifying it and more's happened. So Melinda, thank you.
Sure, you're welcome.
Okay, so we were
Thank you for having me on to clarify. You know, I've done some other interviews, and each time I didn't necessarily make, you know, occasionally, you know, you do an interview and someone asks you questions and it takes it a certain direction, and maybe it takes it away from the things you're really hoping to cover. So I'm really glad to have this opportunity both to inform people who may not be aware of this story and of these documents. So we're, you know, for that reason had to kind of start from scratch, but also to bring out the information that I have, you know.
Yeah, you've got the history of these documents. This is what everybody else doesn't understand. You've been dealing with this situation basically for 25 years. So it's really, you're the person that should be telling the history of the documents. And Grant's been doing great research too. And Randy, of course, and me a little bit, you know, because I got involved with this back when I finally realized that Bob Bigelow was behind the scenes as the wizard, so behind the curtain. And I thought, okay, I've got to look into this. And the next thing I know, I'm going down another whole rabbit hole with the working group. So, and NIDS and, you know, the whole bit. So that's where my research started, was actually with Bob Bigelow. That was like when I heard about him for the very first time many, many years ago, I wanted to know who was the guy behind the Art Bell show back in the early 90s. So that's when I started looking into it. And back then there was hardly any information out there about any of this. And until I met you, I hadn't put together all the pieces. So you were living it. That's what people need to understand, is Melinda was living this whole connection with the working group all the way forward. And now it's all come full circle. So she's got the history for you guys. So I'm not going to talk anymore here right now. We were at the point where we were talking about that Grant had gotten all the information, you'd got all the information. Oh, and by the way, one other quick note before we go on. I have a videotape that I've never released of the day that Melinda told Grant all about her involvement with this. And Melinda, maybe later tonight you and I will talk about maybe getting that out there now. What do you think? Think it's time?
Yeah, I might want to see it first.
I haven't even edited or I've done nothing with it. It's just sat there on a chip, and I've never touched it because I
forget that you recorded our conversation. Yeah.
Yeah, I promised the both of you I wouldn't do anything with it until it was time, and I think it's time now. So anyhow, but okay, go ahead.
Well, it might be reviewing it whether it's still pertinent, you know, whether it matters.
I think it's a history lesson. People. I think it would be really good for people to hear it and then go forward with what we've been getting now, But anyhow, that's another whole story. Sure.
It was when I saw this document on Saturday that I realized, well, I've got something backing up that one part.
Exactly.
You know? And not that I'm out to prove the whole document. You know, a few people have accused me of that. Any additional evidence or documentation that anyone has regarding this, it's helpful to come forward with, because we're trying to figure out the story. We're trying to figure out, are these documents legit? Because if they are, the nature of what is included in them is disclosure. It's highly significant. And it has everything to do with what is going on right now with the current disclosure happening at the hands of To the Stars and its associated people, that they have changed the conversation. They're working behind closed doors in D.C., in Washington, with senators. I mean, now we just had yesterday where it came out that, or the day before yesterday, the three senators said, hey, we were briefed on this. You know, you had Stephanopoulos, who goes way back with the Rockefeller Initiative story, while working for ABC, asking President Trump about it. You know, you have the show Unidentified on TV, along with what is going on in the public arena, in the news, where this is now being addressed, not with a smirk or a giggle, being addressed on Fox, on CNN. Daily right now. I mean, literally almost daily that this is hitting the news right now. And that had a lot to do with To the Stars and their meetings in D.C. with various individuals, which may have been originally to get funding for projects they had going on in the aerospace community. But it has obviously grown into a discussion where senators and the president are being briefed and openly stating that they were. You guys, that's huge in ufology. And so you go back to, at the same time all this is going on, these documents come out. And these documents that are coming out are naming names of individuals involved with To the Stars and ATIP and BAS. You know, you go back before an ATIP into OSAP and BAS, and before that NIDS. I have a timeline in a presentation I did for Lorianne at UFOCon a year and a half ago, and then just over a year ago, and then last August did again for her in an updated version with a lot of new additional parts to it that I presented in August for her MUFON Sonoma Marin County. That is up on a website, and Lorianne, I hope under this interview, all over it. I mean, put it on giant words on the screen, whatever. If you can, and someone can edit that in, or at least have it in the write-up under the interview, the link to that, because people can understand Randy Kopang's and my investigation for 25 years into this group, which we were able to research a 40-year history of. So it's a 40-year history, at least, of these individuals and their involvement. And we researched a 40-year history that was a project we had for 25 years. So people can go and watch my full presentation on that. Now, there's been new additions since August. I gave it for our local MUFON chapter here in Sedona, Arizona, an update. Unfortunately, it was a small audience, and it was not recorded. I wish it had been recorded, because I really worked on updating it. In the event I get asked to do it anywhere, I will give an up-to-the-minute update, you know, and include even a reference to these newest developments, which are these document leaks. So it appears, though, that these documents are all related to documentation shared amongst NIDS, which was headed up by Robert Bigelow, funded by him, probably the organizational director was John Alexander. And so, you know, it had a group of people involved for a number of years. Different people came in and out of it. And eventually it morphed into what we now know as, and this isn't a far reach, there's lots of evidence to suggest, it was the precursor to BASS, which was Bigelow Aerospace Advanced Science Studies. And then after that, out of BASS begat ATIP, or begat OSAP and ATIP, both. And that ATIP, while running out of the Pentagon, being a Pentagon program, the operations of it, the daily operations, the research and everything was happening at Bigelow. I think that's well established.
Right.
Meaning Bigelow's, you know, headquarters outside of Vegas. So there you go. And so there is a string the dots connection between the individuals involved. And of course, then ATIP came to the stars and you have certain individuals, you know, going back. Of course, there's a direct link all the way back in that of Hal Puthoff, but even other individuals, including Oak Shannon, an original member of the working group, saying to Wilson, here's Eric Davis, we're sending him on our behalf. I think it looks clear to me and other researchers when reading the document that Eric is sent to that interview to interview Wilson based upon Oak Shannon saying, hey, come do this, but he was sent on behalf of NIDS. So when he's writing these notes, these are not probably, because the way that these have been leaked out together as a group together, it is not hard to extrapolate that these notes that Eric wrote were for the NIDS members. Like, I've done the interview at your request, here's the notes on it. Now, how did that get leaked out? We don't know for sure. There are researchers in the community, me included, feeling that because of the third document, which was a letter from Bob Bigelow to Dr. Edgar Mitchell, Dr. Edgar Mitchell, was on the board, or at least the scientific advisory board, which in the letter they called the SAB, you know, scientific advisory board to NIDS, as my understanding, he was a paid consultant along with Eric Davis at the time, that these were paid consultants to NIDS science advisory board. And so therefore Mitchell would have been copied on everything going on at the time in NIDS and possibly some back history, you know, to bring him up to speed. This is what we've done. This is where we're, you know, what we have going on now. And he's participating in those meetings. The third document, which was released by Grant, but was part of the original set of documents given to him, he felt was necessary to come out with at this time because it was evidence suggesting, being that it was a letter written to Dr. Mitchell, right, that these were documents in his possession. So everyone's kind of going for it on the premise, we don't know it for sure, but on the likely premise that these were documents in the possession of the late Dr. Edgar Mitchell, which may have been given to someone before he died, who has now released these or worked with a group of individuals to release these. I and a few others have speculated on how that might be, although I've had a discussion with Richard Dolan about it, who disagreed with me but wouldn't completely dismiss it. And me and a few other people think that this is highly likely, and I'm not going to say who. Again, we're protecting that individual, but it speaks to what might be the motives. If we're right, and or if these did come from Eric Mitchell, not that he said, none of us are thinking that he said, oh, you know, when I die, come out with these. Maybe he did. We can't rule that out. But I spoke at length to Ray Hernandez, who is the director of FREE, the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters, who knew Dr. Edgar Mitchell personally quite well, interviewed him extensively and does feel that Dr. Mitchell would not have come out with these himself or necessarily even had wished them to come out, but he may have, while working on some projects prior to his death, had provided them to other individuals who may then be the ones releasing these. Again, we can't say that he didn't, but again, I'm going with Ray saying, look, I know the man. I don't think he would have done this, but other, but people who he gave his documents to may very well have. Which gets me to something I do want to eventually get into, which is, well, two things. I want to address why I feel all the, three of these documents matter so significantly. And two, get into what I think. It's Melinda's own theory based upon all the information that I've been presented with and followed on this so far, but stands to reason to be possible motives why someone released these. Some of them I think are obvious, which have to do with the timing of this coming out in the midst of disclosure hitting the mainstream news. And a view of disclosure that is very focused on it coming from the military initially, military witnesses, military insiders, the Navy having a new program for, you know, announcing, you know, the first off, the Pentagon announcing, the Pentagon coming out the ATIP program, the Pentagon admitting to it. Then additionally, the Navy and the Air Force coming out was saying, hey, we have new procedures for Navy and Air Force personnel to come forward with their accounts and their sightings, whether in the past or presently, and that we support them in doing that, and we have a new policy, and you know, et cetera, et cetera. There's a very military angle on this. In some way, I can say I applaud those who may be making disclosure happen as coming at it from such a military angle, because people accept when the military says, we know this, we're looking right at this, this matters, because we all are very patriotic, and I get that, and that's probably brilliant, you know, and, you know, as opposed to having it come from some other source of government that everyone would not trust. What is the one area of government that people still trust? The military. So, and as well, we should, we have to, we kind of need to, there's a whole bunch of logic there. So, and that's not to say it's all true. And it's not to say there isn't a spin to it. Many people are speculating on the spin here. So we can say, okay, it's brilliant to come from the military. Everybody pays attention. They listen. The news takes it seriously. Military witnesses are taken seriously. Great. But at the same time, it is being peddled as somewhat of a threat, that the ETs are somehow threatening, that the technology is threatening, that we have to prepare for what this technology means, et cetera. And, you know, that seems to be apparent in there, too. It's kind of a double-edged sword for ufology. It's like, yay, disclosure. Oh, no, it's being peddled as a threat. You know, so it's not to laugh. That's a very serious thing. But it puts us in an uncomfortable position of going, well, gosh, we want it, but do we want it that way? You know, but anyways, that's a separate thing. And there are people, even researchers in the field, who will disagree with me on that. I think it's everyone. I'm just saying, be careful of the spin. You know, that's all. And it's something to consider, and you know, in the midst. But going back to now the third document, we haven't talked about that, and we'll get back to the second document because it's kind of the most meaty, admittedly. The first one being about the alien autopsy remains in question. I know some different researchers have it planned to interview Ray Santilli, even some radio shows. It'll be interesting to see what he says. Does he, in fact, fully stand by the film as legitimate? And, you know, but again, just because this group of individuals felt that back at the time that those emails and that memo were written, does it mean they still feel that way? And you know, that remains a question. So I don't think we should all rush into, oh, because the state the autopsy is real, therefore it is. Well, I think research needs to be done. But certainly Ray Santilli's comments and his wanting to stand by it as authentic all these years later, when, you know, at one time you could say, well, he was in it for the money. Now it's like, well, you guys, it's 25 years later. Why is he saying why is he saying it now? Other than, you know, he feels that this coming out is somehow vindicating him. So and so that's curious. Let's follow that. But again, that's not my expertise, and I kind of want to stay clear of it. All I did was I came forward with this document I had saying, hey, that meeting at BDM happened, which Grant had part of. I just had more. So I came forward with all of it. Now, those documents from that meeting have been shared with researcher Keith Basterfield, who has been putting up all these documents on a blog. And he asked me if he could, and I gave him permission. So they're out there and can be viewed on Keith Basterfield's blog. But going back to, so why I feel, okay, let's skip to the third one real quick. So the third document is the letter from Bigelow to Dr. Edgar Mitchell. But it's clear, I reread it again today, and it is at least clear to me, that while the letter has, you know, it says to Dr. Edgar Mitchell, his address or whatever on it, that it was actually a letter being sent out to all the, and it could be the beginning a letter was customized and changed for each individual about an upcoming meeting at NIDS and what they were going to cover and talk about at that meeting. So the letter starts out like, all right, Dr. Mitchell, I'm telling you this is what we're going to do. But then there's other paragraphs later in the letter that are clearly for intended for viewing by the other members. So I think he probably sent a letter to each of the members. It just reads that way to me. I think that's self-evident. But in this letter addressed to him, it gets all into these upcoming meetings and things they're going to talk about. So let me go back to saying why I think all three of these documents are important, because the last thing I'm going to get into with that is why I think the letter is important. Okay. Now, I recommend if anyone has not seen these documents, they are available online. Again, maybe, Lorianne, maybe when we post this later, we can add links to all three of the documents being discussed here. And so, you know, links can be provided and or copies of, you know, under the posting of this interview. I think we can do that. But anyway, so why I think these matter, and this is my point of view. I have had discussions in depth. Now, I have spoken to James Rigney directly. I have spoken to Grant for many hours, phone calls and text conversations. James Rigney in multiple text conversations, Richard Dolan on the phone, and in multiple text conversations. So I can, and also Ray Hernandez on the phone. So I know where these folks, you know, stand on these things. But I'm going to own this, you know, why I think it's important. I believe these other researchers would agree with me on these points, or at least, you know, the majority of these points. And this is after talking to everybody. So I feel like I'm speaking for all of them when I say these things. One is that the group behind this, so if there is a link going from the working group, and I strongly believe there is, from the working group to NIDS and its formation and the members of NIDS rolling over, then becoming, eventually changing name and becoming BASS, and BASS becoming OSAP, ATIP, and then, of course, you know, To the Stars feeding off of that, that this group of individuals behind this, and why I feel To the Stars, because a lot of people might go, well, the only one that you can relate to all these, you know, this background is Hal Puthoff. And some people have already brought that up. Well, I go back to meetings and conversations that I have had with Jim Samivant. Jim Semivan at one time, it said on the To the Stars Academy website that he was the director of operations. At some point that was changed. I don't know exactly when, but looking at it in more recent times, I noticed that it now says he is vice president and co-founder, president being Tom DeLonge and founder being Tom DeLonge, but he was vice president and co-founder, possibly still director of operations. That would not be a far reach to say that he's also fulfilling that role, even if it didn't say it on the website. But, you know, that's just a summation on my part. Okay, so he once said to me in a meeting we first had where he came to Sedona and we had lunch together, and it was a year ago February. It was actually on Super Bowl Sunday a year ago. So, you know, it's been a year and a couple months, year and a half. And at that meeting, he said to the stars, when you think of it as the, 10 or 12 people listed on their website, that is the public face of a much bigger group. And I think that's very important, and everybody needs to remember that. I think he gave me some useful information in that. And probably, who knows if it was accurate, but I do believe that at the time that was accurate, that he was saying, and I've asked him about it since. Just for clarity, in recent conversations, to say, you once said this, is that the case? Is the board of directors and the people we hear about and the people on the TV show, you know, et cetera, you know, Steve Justice and Chris Mellon and DeLon and Lou and Hal and Jim Semivan, you know, et cetera, and the additional people on the website, is that still just the public face of a bigger group? And he has said yes. I said one time you told me that was closer to like 50 people. Is that accurate? He said yes. So just know that it's a bigger group, of which you can extend out to other people that we have reason to know are involved in the bigger group. And for instance, the work of the Adam Project, and therefore involving Eric Davis, and the work with abductees, for instance, the work between Dr. Gary Nolan and Jacques Vallée and Dr. Green, and their work with abductees as being a part of that larger extended group. I think that's very safe to say.
Right, right, of course.
So going back to when you think of To the Stars as a larger group, so therefore, you end up having connections, for instance, Colm Kelleher and Bigelow himself, to the bigger group. Okay, so again, there's a direct connections. And other people, as stated, who were involved in the ATIP program as being part of the bigger group. So again, that's not a far reach. That this group, the whole group, knows what these documents are showing is that this group knows much more than they are saying or addressing currently, you know, in their current disclosure story and everything they've been saying and what their interests are. There's obviously much more than they're saying. And these documents spell that out. Okay. So that's one reason why I feel they're extremely important. The other is that why that meeting happened between Wilson, Vice Admiral Wilson, and Dr. Eric Davis. I keep wanting to say Edgar Mitchell, Eric Davis, and getting confused. Okay, just too many names in my head, you know. But why that meeting between Dr. Eric Davis and Mitchell even happened goes back to a statement by Oak Shannon, one of the original members of the working group, saying, hey, you know, and Wilson is saying, hey, he told me all about it. I know all about it. I know the history, which points to the fact that obviously he's stating that Eric knew the history and that it's okay to talk about because Oak has already clued him in. There's no less than three paragraphs in this letter that address this, you know, so it's obviously an important factor, and it speaks to the reason Eric is there. It's not hard to extrapolate that he was sent by NIDS. Okay. So And so that makes it very important in relationship to what is currently going on in the disclosure story, because of the things that are then become mentioned in the Wilson interview document. So why the meeting happened is very important. Why did that take place? Okay. Number three, that the admiral was shut out. This gets to the meat of what's really important is in the Wilson document itself. The admiral who was, at the time he was looking into this, at the time, now it started with, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because it's kind of complicated, but it started with Stephen Greer and Willard Miller, who was Captain Willard Miller in the Navy, and Stephen Greer and some other staff people working for Greer, like Sherry Adamant, and also Edgar Mitchell, having a meeting that Willard Miller had set up, this meeting with and Mitchell, I believe too, upon rereading all the documents today, that Mitchell was also involved in this setting it up, this meeting with Wilson initially. And so they had a meeting with him. It was in the late 90s. I'm forgetting the exact year. But it's referenced in the document. I just don't have it in front of me, but it's referenced in the interview. So that original meeting, that had happened, caused the vice admiral to then say, well, wait a second. He was being briefed by like Greer and company. Now, it's said from what you may feel about Greer or whatever, that did happen. He was with those people and it was early on in the disclosure project and that meeting did happen. All those people involved have been very upfront about the history of that meeting. So here's Wilson then, who's after leaving that said, well, wait a second. How come I don't know more about this? This is in my purview. This would be my responsibility. This subject matter would fall under my jurisdiction as my job title and description, So he started to look into it. Well, it turns out, and I don't need to go over every detail in the document, in the Wilson interview, you can read it yourself, but he goes on telling Dr. Eric Davis, I was completely shut out. I was only allowed to ask so much. When I looked deeper, I wasn't allowed to know anymore. And he said, as my position as Deputy Director of the Defense Intelligence Agency Joint Chiefs of Staff, these people would be under me, And yet he wasn't able to find out more. So here's just a quick bullet list of some of the main things that become so significant because of this document. Now, you can say this is all stuff we knew, the things I'm about to bring up. But we've never had hard documentation supporting it, particularly from an individual such as the Deputy Director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, the Joint Chiefs of Staff. That's huge that somebody in that position would be stating all this.
Right, right.
To Dr. Eric Davis, a member of NIDS, why is he telling them?
Yeah.
And so again, it gets back to group number one. This whole group knows much more than they're letting on. And I've been saying that for years. And Grant's been saying that. But now we have what? Why is this important? It's a document. It's a document about a meeting between these individuals. They are saying no comment, no comment, no comment, no comment, Okay, which is curious in itself. So you have the Admiral Wilson interview document talks about crashed UFOs, alien hardware, that we have in our possession, a functioning one, that there is an in-depth reverse engineering program to figure out how these work, that a group, a cabal, as it's referenced, such as MJ-12, does in fact exist. Here's a quote from him. There is such an organization, there's such an organization in existence, end quote. And that he was led through different contacts he has in his position to do a search on Pentagon records So he did a Pentagon records search that states that this exists. That there are ARVs, alien reproduction vehicles, that this is very tight. Again, another quote, that this subject, meaning the UFO subject, is very tightly held information. It's absolutely held subject matter. There's never been anything like this in black programs, in the black programs community, end quote. He said the special projects, it's in special projects, it's compartmentalized. It's not in the usual SAP projects, which is, unacknowledged special access programs, SAP, which is USAP. So SAP is special access programs. This is in special projects, not in the usual grouping of SAP, meaning the dealing with this, and the dealing with this being an existence of a cabal group overseeing it, that it's gone in the hands of private aerospace. That's another thing stated in the document. He has a meeting at a major aerospace company in California, and everyone reading it goes, okay, it's obviously Lockheed. It's not stated in the letter, but a lot of people reading it have come to that conclusion. But, you know, whether it was Lockheed or Boeing, you know, or at the time McDonnell Douglas, doesn't matter, you know, but we believe it was Lockheed. And that he's, you know, has a meeting with officials there who tell him, admit, yes, the program's going on, but say, you can't have access to it. And then he goes back to D.C., back to, you know, his officials saying, I have to be read in on this. It's under my purview. It's under my jurisdiction. It's my responsibility. And they're literally told, nope, you don't have need to know. This is the Deputy Director of Defense Intelligence Agency being told you have no need to know. You guys, this is huge. This is absolutely huge. Okay. Then it goes to that a contractor runs the program. You know, that a general contractor, you know, such as a, you know, aerospace contractor, an aerospace, you know, technical contractor runs the program on this. And it's outside of his purview with the Defense Department. It doesn't even make any sense, you know. Okay. And then the whole document explains what he learned combined with what he knew about the compartmentalization to cover it, how it's been, how the subject has been so compartmentalized. Now, again, in ufology, do we know that? Yeah. But have we had a document stating that? That's what makes this significant. And yes. Then going into the third document, the Bigelow Mitchell letter, again, shows, because it's specifically on NID's letterhead, so there ain't no guess there. It's on NID's letter, National Institute of Discovery Science letterhead, NIDS, from Bigelow to Dr. Edgar Mitchell saying, you know, and again, just what it says in that document shows that these guys knew a lot more. That now, one thing Randy and I have found repeatedly over our years of investigation is from day one, it states, and again, Keith Basterfield put it up. People can go look, search his blog and look it up, and we'll put links. Keith Basterfield, what I'm saying is in the original agenda and minutes that I have from that original meeting is that one of their primary interests was an interest in abductions. It's stated there clearly.
Absolutely.
That comes full circle now to this letter from Robert Bigelow to Dr. Mitchell saying what we're going to address in the upcoming NIDS meeting is, it states in every other paragraph, it states it's about abductions. That is one of the key things. It's about the technology. You know, of course, the technology, the reverse engineering of it. Duh. Okay. And psi ability, which was an interest of NIDS all along. Okay, psi, that component and the abduction component and the relationship between those. That is what I've been stating is why MILABs happen, and this is completely dovetailed 100% with my MILABs research, that is why there is an interest in the abductees. Well, guess what? The MILAB perpetrators aren't the only people who've been interested. These guys have been interested going back from 1995, as stated repeatedly in their notes from that meeting and their overhead projector and their agenda, all the way forward to their constant involvement. And again, everyone can watch my full presentation I did for Lorianne, which spells it out and gives example after example after example of their interest in abductees. But ta-da! Guess what, Lori? And I have another piece of evidence on NID's letterhead from Robert Bigelow to Mitchell saying, we're talking about abduction.
Right.
And they go on to say, not only do they have the interest, that they've received implants, and those implants are being sent to Los Alamos. Guess what else they say in there? Not only about the alien implants, but they talk about metal samples. We're all thinking Adam Project's just looking into these, right? What's To the Star saying? Oh, yeah, Adam Project. Oh, yeah, we're just starting to look into this.
Oh,
yeah,
we're
looking into
yeah.
things that have come in our possession. You guys, here's a letter from many years ago saying Los Alamos has already looked at these for us, and we're going to address the findings at our meeting. It's
exactly
in there.
Now,
so they already had these, and they were already working with Los Alamos years ago. You guys, the metamaterials and all that, it states this in that letter. It ain't something new. They've been looking at it all along. Again, the importance of these documents. These documents spell out these guys know a lot more than they're saying. Okay,
absolutely.
Then the implants went to Los Alamos. We're good. Guess whose implants they're talking about? Now, I know from the research, they funded Roger Lear's surgical removals. If you're an abductee out there and Roger Lear removed your stuff, guess what? It went to these guys. They funded, Bigelow funded, NIDS Bigelow funded Roger Lear's surgical removals.
That's right.
How else was he paying for all that? And when they were saying we're getting results from labs, well, what you weren't being told, apparently, is some of those results were from Los Alamos, as stated in this letter. Okay, and then metallurgical analysis. Again, metallurgy analysis already going on with crash-retrieved parts back then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And then in the midst of the Wilson memo is a letter from Miller, Willard Miller, who went on to have an additional meeting after the meeting. Okay, the meeting that he and I guess Edgar Mitchell helped set up for Greer to be there and talk to them and everything. Okay, he stayed later. And this has apparently been well known for a long time. Greer's talked about this. He stayed later. After that, he sends at some point a letter, after the communication with the meeting with Dr. Davis and Wilson, Miller sends a letter. No, it's before then. It is before then because it's referenced by Wilson. Wilson brings it up and says, I didn't tell Willard Miller everything. So I take it back.
Right.
Eric Davis brings it up, and Wilson's response is, I didn't tell Willard Miller everything, okay, but I did tell him a lot. And then that letter is inserted as like an additional document within the document, which is this two-page letter from Willard Miller to Eric Davis. Now, some people have now researched and bothered. I'll give them credit. It was Chant Hanna and Frank Stalter have both spoken to Willard Miller. And he says, well, the first paragraph, which states some meeting at a conference and, you know, something that's clearly on the public record. So he says, well, I was at that meeting and I know those individuals and that happened. I think someone is, you know, paraphrasing me. But the rest of it, and there were these four numbered paragraphs in the letter that he's numbered as key points he's wishing to share with Eric Davis / more than likely NIDS, that he's sharing, I have this, and da-da-da-da-da. And he goes on to say, I can get you crashed UFO materials and people associated with those programs that I am in communication with because of my speaking with Wilson, okay, with Admiral Wilson. So he's stating that. Now, he is denied, and in all fairness, in some radio, not radio, I'm sorry, in phone interviews with them, from Chant Hanna and Frank Stalter both interviewing him, he denied that he said the rest of that. But I'm going to bring up an obvious point, and it was not lost on Rich Dolan. Richard Dolan, in one of his four recent, you know, video blog posts that he's put up, giving the updates on this, and I recommend everybody watch all those. You really want to understand this? Richard has done a really good recap in four different videos. Now, he's been at AlienCon in LA, and my guess is as soon as he lands, he's going to do another one. And I gave him not only Keith Basterfield, but I gave Dolan the documents as well. So I suspect he may reference them that I had. But they've already been put out there by Keith. But that way he can reference them and that Keith has them and et cetera. So going back to, what was I saying? That was my train of thought there.
You were talking about Willard and his denial of the other part of the letter.
Yeah, exactly. So he denied that. And I said it wasn't lost on Dolan. That's what I started to say. When Dolan said in his, I think it was the third video, you know, he goes, okay, I realize, you know, people are saying he's denied that when he was interviewed. And he goes, really? Dolan's take. He literally looks at the camera and goes, really? You know, because of course, yeah. I feel the same way. Of course he's going to deny that. Those four bolted things, man, I tell you, or four numbered, they're not bolted, they're numbered.
Right,
But those things would get him killed. Okay, he would have to deny them. They're breaking every security oath he had and any promise he made to someone else, which Wilson makes a point of in the interview. Eric brings it up and says, did you see the letter? And he says, yes. And Wilson is literally saying he's going against everything that our camaraderie in the Navy stands for and naval intelligence and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So he's like bad-mouthing a minute for having had shared that. And obviously whoever's getting a copy of the you know, the notes from the interview, you know, that Eric is sharing them with shares the letter too. So that's why it's included in there. And it's referenced. It's referenced at the bottom of the page of his notes where he says, you know, copy of the letter included, you know, so it's there. And that is the letter where he goes into saying, I know people, I have access to these things, I can get them for you guys. Now, we don't know if he got them, all that stuff or not, but he's clearly, you know, saying that he does in this letter, and he has denied it. Of course he would have to deny it, you know, like Richard Dolan said in his video.
Yeah.
Really? Of course he'd have to deny it. So you know, that doesn't mean it didn't happen, you know? You know, it just means he's saying no comment. Now, I have said all the individuals mentioned in these documents, the guys who are with NIDS, the To the Stars group, you know, etc., they have circled the wagons. Although I jokingly say, Lorianne, they haven't circled the wagons, they circled the fighter jets.
Yeah.
I joke.
Well,
there.
Actually, yeah. I was thinking they circled the UAPs.
Yeah. But I used to say they circled the wagons, and I said, no, they circled the tanks. And then I thought about it later and said, no, they circled the fighter jets because, you know, that's relating to the current disclosure story. But, you know, and they've locked arms and they're giving a unanimous front of no comment. Now,
that's
some
right.
people say, well, they're making some comments. No, their comments are well-constructed, no comments. Now, interestingly, everyone involved that's been approached or asked, and there's some, you know, statements on the record and some emails from them and whatnot, they're all, none of them are denying it. There's been no denial.
Exactly.
There's not been a denial from any one of them.
Yep.
Which somebody could have easily said, oh, that's fake, that's a hoax, we never said it, la 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 la. The only one giving a denial is Willard Miller about that one letter. He didn't deny everything else. He's not
That's
commenting
right.
on everything else. He just denied that one thing because he said, yeah, that first paragraph, that was a meeting, a conference, it happened, you know, he knows it's on the public record. But the other things, of course, there's nothing to back them up. So it's easy to deny because it's his word against whatever, but he's saying, oh no, I don't know what the rest of that is. Well, of course he'd have to. When you read what they say and you keep that in mind, you go, well, of course he's going to have to deny that. He's just going to say, I don't know what that is. I never said it. I didn't write that, because it would be thrown on Eric Davis to say, yes, he wrote this. Yes, I got a hold of it. But Eric's not talking either. These guys have circled the fighter jets, the wagons, locked arms, and they have a unanimous no comment. But again, like Dolan had a conversation with Hal Putoff about it. Hal followed up to Richard Dolan in an email, gave him a statement he could actually publish. And that statement was, according to Richard, and I agree, a very brilliantly crafted non-denial.
Right.
And I had a 43-minute long conversation with Jim Samuban. 43-minute long non-denial.
Exactly.
I gave him every opportunity and asked it from every angle imaginable, and he kept coming back to me with the same stuff. And tried to downplay it. Oh, we had a meeting about it, meaning the Mitchell document, and the other guys. Oh, we had a meeting. We talked about it. Not a big deal. Both his and Hal's comment and everybody, I think it's thou protest too much.
or you know? Protest too little in this case. I think there's just a big silence.
Yeah, well,
here.
Protest too much, meaning saying, no, it's no big deal. Well, you know.
Yeah,
I think it is important to them. Now, I want to get into that.
We only have 4 minutes or less left in the show. So
okay. The last thing I'm going to read up really, really quick, if I can, is why I think, and I will own this, and someone could disagree with me, but I'm going to read through real quick why I think. If I can find them quickly. That's why it matters. Damn it. Come on, Melinda. Why I think someone did this, what their motivation is. Okay, reasons to release. I can read these really quick.
Okay.
So I said, I don't know if the person who did this is trying to push the subject way forward due to being very, meaning the whole disclosure thing, it way forward due to being impatient with the current disclosure trajectory. In other words, what's going on, what's hitting the news, they're wanting to push that forward and release some things to cause that to speed up. As far as the timing, why did this come out in the last 2 weeks? You know, well, okay, obviously they are pushing it forward. Now, is that part of their reasoning? I don't know. Okay, but I throw that out there. Two, that they don't like where it's going with the threat perspective, that they're clearly showing these people no more. There's something up. There's an agenda here. And maybe someone who's doing this doesn't like the threat perspective. Maybe it's someone who's against weaponization space, as an example. Okay. Number three, that they wish to expose that these folks know a lot more than they're saying. Well, that's clear. These three documents clearly so far, and if more are coming out, they're clearly showing that the folks, you know, who are mentioning them know a lot more than they're saying. So that's a given. That, again, who knows their motive for putting it out there, but I speculate that one of their motives is to point that out and make that clear. Four is to redirect the disclosure conversation more towards the truth or a bigger, more meaningful story. In other words, you guys, it's time to include these other subjects, like abduction, since that's mentioned repeatedly in these documents, okay?
Right,
so,
right.
So maybe that's part of what they're trying to do, is to push forth a bigger, more truthful story. And number five, that maybe they're trying to point out or expose the agenda of the people involved with the current disclosure story. I kind of already said that. I just restated it. But there you go. So that's what I throw out, is what the motivation might be. Because these documents are doing those things, and maybe that's exactly what they intended.
Yep. There we go. Well, I got to tell you, Melinda, this has just been fascinating. I'm going to try to get it up on a website and get Nighthawk to get me the file, and I'll get it out on Facebook as soon as possible, because if people hear your last hour and 45 minutes of comment, I think they're going to really understand what's going on here. So thank you very much for that. And I've known about this for such a long time, and you and I have been just kind of sitting back waiting to see if anybody would do anything about it. I guess these guys got tired, and here we go. So, you know, it's just
the
way it is.
Yeah, I mean, just everyone scratching their head and saying it's the timing of these documents. The timing seems to have something very strongly to do with the motivation, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I know the music's going to start any second now because I can feel it coming. But thank you so much. Now, if everybody wants to see Melinda's presentation, you go to MUFON, that's M-U-F-O-N, MarinSonoma.com, and it will give you the history before all of these documents got released and where they came from and who the players are. So be sure to go there and watch that presentation. I'd really appreciate it if you did. That's MUFON, Marin, M-A-R-I-N, Sonoma, S-O-N-O-M-A.com, and go to the on-demand and store section, and you'll see Melinda's presentation right there at the bottom of the page. And I hope to have this posted, this interview posted there as well. So thanks, everybody, and thank you, Melinda. And Melinda, stay on the call. I'll talk to you afterwards. Everybody else, good night.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, and thank you, Lorianne, for letting me clarify these things.
You got it, dear. Thanks a lot, everybody. Good night. See you next week.
Welcome to Revolution Radio, where you, the listeners, are in charge. Here at Revolution Radio, we present 48 broadcast hours of news and information each and every day. Revolution Radio never sleeps. Revolution Radio is worldwide and borderless information. Revolution Radio is also commercial free. Revolution Radio is supported 100% by you, the listeners. And that's why we appeal to you to donate and support this station and its expenses. You can support us in many available options like archive subscriptions, our seed pack selections, or even my woodworking store. And we also even have Revolution Radio's swag at the Revolution Radio Zazzle store, which you can get t-shirts, coffee cups, even a baby onesie. Or you can just plain donate to the cause. We cannot continue without your support, and your support is what helps pay the bills. So please, if you wish us to continue, please stop by our station support page and drop a dime on us. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. Data safe? Do you have the necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation? Is survival and gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive.
Over 3 gigs of survival documents and how-tos, plus the USDA offline food preservation website, and much, much more, including a surprise bonus we just can't tell you about here. With plenty of room left over to store your most important documents. Imagine if a megavirus or a computer failure took out your bank or all the banks.